As you began preparations for this conference, one felt there were many things to celebrate, such as evidence of the increasing consolidation of the rule of law and the continuing modernization of judicial service infrastructure. Yet here we are today, struck down by the tsunami of scandal that threatens to wash away the integrity of the entire judicial arm of government. Job, I speak with the pain of a nation betrayed and the anguish of a people ravaged, whose faith in their nation's most cherished institutions now lie in a crushed earth. Job, I cast my mind across the firmament and see the monuments of the great luminaries of Ghana's legal history, Sir Akukosa, Sir Henley Kusi, Sir Leslie McCarthy, Kwasi Aiden, Niamah Oleinu, Edward Akufo-Addo, Fred Apalo, and many more who, combining intellect and wisdom with overaching integrity, built the formidable judicial system we so proudly inherited. Sure. How these great sons of Africa must be turning in their graves. But our Lady Chief Justice, Excellencies, learned friends, I, the king of a warrior kingdom, do not submit to despair. So beyond all the pain and anguish, I come to you with faith and with hope. I come to you with faith in the ultimate goodness of our countrymen, faith in our capacity to rise from the ashes of despair. For a start, the world can be assured that the commitment of the nation to democracy is irreversible. Job. And that everyone is aware that the commitment, however, will be hollow without a robust, credible judicial arm. So there's no way that this nation is going to allow the judiciary, the judicial arm of government, or any of its institutions to wither away. Whatever it takes, however long it takes, all of us, chiefs and people, young and old, will rally together to salvage the integrity of the judiciary.
Job.
We can neither afford any compromises nor risk throwing the baby with the bathwater. Even as the legal and administrative processes continue, the national interest requires us all to begin anew to clean the stables and rebuild the foundations of a stronger, indestructible, transparent, and morally upright judicial service.
So,
I need to make it clear at this point that the lesson of the moment is not for or about the judiciary or the system of justice delivery alone. Most importantly, it is a wake-up call for all and everyone in all the arms of government, in all public services and in the highest echelons of private business, whether you are in the executive or the legislature, in the police service or the customs and excise and preventive service, the warning bell is ringing aloud. Corruption is not a judicial disease. It is and has always been a national disease. So there must be in several areas of public life where several hearts are pounding and pondering where next.
So,
there is a beautiful passage in the book of Samuel where the prophet is asked, what will be the sign of the coming of the end? He responded, as it was in the days before Noah and Ark, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, and they knew not until the floods came and took them all away. So shall be the sign of the coming of the end.
So,
I commend this passage to all in the depths of compromise within the arms of government, to all whose hearts are aflutter from fears of the next episode.
Job.
And I do so with a message, repent, repent, lest the flood come to sweep you away.
Job.
Mr. President, this conference should mark the beginning of the process of rebuilding and renewal. As I have already alluded to, if you set aside this sad episode, this generation of Ghanaians are right to take pride in our democratic progression over the past two decades. Beyond the electoral achievements, we have grown in confidence that no more shall any individual or groups of individuals impose himself or themselves upon our nation as leaders, but that we shall, at all times, afford ourselves the right to choose our leaders, good or bad, and live with the consequences.
So,
we have demonstrated also that our democratic progression is anchored upon the firm foundations of the rule of law, which guarantees that, in his daily life, the citizen's wants will be protected from arbitrary arrest and the capricious exercise of power by persons in authority.
So,
I was pleased only a few days ago to observe the further consolidation of the rule of law in a case that may not have attracted the same degree of attention, but which, in my view, had profound consequences for the rule of law in Ghana. And I'm referring to the case of the Ghanaian citizen who reportedly walked into a church where the president is known to worship with a gun and reportedly confessed that he had come to shoot the president because he felt the president had usurped the position which he should have inherited on the death of former President Mills.
So,
now, the declared intent of the man was obviously horrendous, and the consequences of his intended act, if he had carried it out, would have been catastrophic for the nation. So when he was arraigned before a circuit court, the judge wasted no time in thrusting him to jail for 10 years.
So,
but then, there was the small matter of due process. It is not for nothing that the rule of law provides for a due process by which guilt and innocence, right or wrong, are determined. It is that process which guarantees equality before the law. The narrow path, if you like, along which all must pass to go to law. Remove the due process and I submit, the rule of law becomes the ruin of
Job. Job.
In this case, the due process would have required a thorough investigation into the state of mind of the person having regard to the strange, even weird nature of his alleged confession. The process further would have demanded that he received adequate legal representation to ensure that however grotesque his alleged crime, he received a fair trial before the law.
So,
this essential, immutable process was not availed to the accused. You know, and I know, of periods in our history when this would have been the end of the road for the accused, when no one would have dared raise a finger on behalf of anyone who expresses an intent to commit a crime against a sitting head of state. Happily, in this case, there was an outcry followed by an appeal to the Court of Human Rights, which quashed the patently unfair imprisonment. Most significantly, even the state agreed with the central argument about the error of the trial judge and supported the demand for the sentence to be quashed, even if it differed on the appropriate superior court entitled to hear the appeal. The bottom line was that the rule of law and due process was affirmed, in contrast to what may have happened under earlier dispensations.
So,
this is a monumental step forward in the consolidation of the rule of law and due process, and I add my warm congratulations to the bar, especially the lawyers who took up the case pro bono.
So,
important as this result has been, the case should nevertheless remind us that the defense and protection of the rule of law demand eternal vigilance, and perhaps this conference could consider producing a declaration committing the association to intervene wherever and whenever they are threatened.
So,
Mr. President,
so,
you who are the learned ones, and I'm part of it now,
so,
tell us that in spite of all the hour in which we hold it, the law is on us. I want, however, to contest this age-old assertion. My own take is that it is not the law which is in us. It is rather the human actors within the legal system whose actions sometimes mimic the unfortunate mama. As, Mr. President, as you begin the process of renewal, we should not forget the web of individual actors whose services impinge upon the legal process. You know how the sloppy investigator and the over-exuberant law enforcement officer can so compromise the process that a patently guilty person may legitimately walk free from justice, just as an innocent person may find himself unjustly deprived of his freedom.
Sure.
In all fields of human endeavor, we strive for improvements. In our closely knit global village, there are best practices to learn from and heights of excellence to aim for. So there's really no excuse in today's world for a country to accept to be met in mediocrity, particularly in a field as crucial as the justice delivery system. Much of the lapses we live with are avoidable and should truly be unacceptable to us. How is it possible for us to expect our police and security services to cope with the challenges of crime in this complex computer age with the methods and infrastructure fit for the 19th century? Our corps have made some progress in updating their infrastructure, but there's still a lot to catch up on. We need to upgrade the training of our police and security services in forensic sciences and to equip them with the skills to deal with the challenges of cybercrime and the many complex financial crimes resulting from the economic advances of our time. You will permit me, my Lady Chief Justice, to address a matter of considerable concern to me about the provision of judicial service in your host city. You will recall that as part of the program of the decentralization of the superior courts, the Court of Appeal edifice in Kumasi was commissioned some 8 years ago. Because of the immediate absence of residential accommodation, it was arranged for the appeals panel to sit in Kumasi for a full week every month. Instead of moving towards a full residential panel, the panel still has to travel from Accra, and now the period of sitting has been scaled down to 4 days a week every other month. With respect, this is an area in which we are falling out of step with the expected rate of progress, and I ask you to join me in a polite submission to my Lady Chief Justice for progress to be made manifest here. It will be fair to take judicial notice of the fact that this is the nation's second capital city in the region, and it serves the northern sector with the largest population density. Inevitably, the caseload here is far greater than you would expect anywhere outside the national capital. The weight of attention it gets must be proportional to its size and the dimension of the problems it faces. Recognizing the problem of resource allocation. Recognizing the problem of resource allocation, I haven't had that with the current regional minister, but I'm going to continue with that. I've had discussions with the regional administration on how we may work together to make available to the judicial service residential accommodation suitable for justices of the top level of the Superior Court. So we progress to the stage of having a permanent appeal court panel based in Kumasi. In the meantime, my lady, I will strongly submit that the service be restored to the initial level. The Bar President, for all the travails of the moment, you and the law remain the bulwarks of our democratic progression. The politicians may be the prime beneficiaries of this progression, but the process belongs very much within the ambit of the law. For a start, although constitutions derive from the mix of social, philosophical, and political thought and the value systems of society, it lies within the bosom of the law, how they are shaped and framed, how we interpret, guide, and defend the Constitution are matters for the law. We need not go too far back into our history to note the leading roles played by